Hi, HR Nation. Welcome back to the HR Leaders Podcast, the show where we explore the future of work with industry experts and HR executives and the world's leading global brands. Today, we're joined by Jennifer Cordell, Chief HR Officer at Charles River Associates. Welcome to the show, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm good, Chris. Thank you so much for having me.
Nice to see you. And super jealous, by the way, for anyone who's watching the show, behind you is actually your office, right? Which looks to me like a five-star hotel.
it's lovely. It's the lobby of our Chicago office location, which we renovated about 2 years ago.
So. It looks pretty amazing. I wouldn't mind spending time there working. Before we jump in, tell everyone a little bit about yourself personally and your kind of journey to where we are now.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been head of HR at a global economics and strategy consultancy for about 8 years now. And prior to that, I was actually on the consulting side at that same firm. So I really sort of grew up in the business and found myself over time increasingly interested in talent strategy and took on a variety of operational and talent line roles until I really sort of consolidated everything under HR. So in my capacity now, I manage a global team. We're about 1,000 people, offices throughout Europe and North America, and a new office in Sao Paulo. So that's been a little bit about my journey.
Amazing. So did you plan on working in HR, or did it kind of just evolved in...
I did not, although it's interesting. It's sort of when I look back now, of course, with the benefit of hindsight, I see that when I was little, I always was sort of managing the work of my friends. we'd get together and I'd organize a newspaper. We'd play office or, I'd have an activity that we were going to sort of produce, and I'd coordinate and direct and manage them. And I always seemed to like office supplies and sort of gravitate towards spending time in my dad's office when I was younger. So maybe the signs were there when I was little that that sort of leading and managing was in my future. But I studied economics and I went for an MBA. So the pieces maybe sort of accumulated over time and eventually pointed themselves to an HR role.
Yeah, seems to be the most common way. It's very like probably you can name on both of my hands out of the 300 guests that actually planned on being in this role. Very, very, very few people.
It's interesting because I know there's a lot of really terrific academic programs that focus on HR, organizational behavior. There's a lot of literature that's emerging about sort of management as a field of study. But I also think that so much of what HR executives bring, the ones that I really admire and see as really effective, is they bring really practical business experience and sort of an understanding of what it's like to be on the receiving end of talent strategy. And so maybe for that reason, it's almost a feature and not a bug that many HR executives emerge from the business as a result of that.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Most of the CHROs I speak to have come from other parts of the business, whether they've worked in sales and operations. Actually, I just recently interviewed the chief HR officer of Lego, and he hadn't done a day of HR, and then he came from the sales operations side straight into the CHRO seat. Right. But it was his background of really, truly living and breathing the business that he brought. That's the value he brought into the seat. And then for all of the other sort of technical areas, he's like, Chris, I hire great people that know more than me.
That resonates a lot. That really does.
Yeah. So what's been going on with you and the team? How have things been? Kind of what's the focus for you now for the next sort of 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a broken record, I'm sure, for other HR executives, but we're very much focused on return to the office and sort of how we're thinking about our strategy there and our planning, and of course work around inclusion, diversity, and equity has also really emerged over the last probably 9 to 12 months for us as really sort of a C-suite level and board level priority. So those are a couple areas. And then of course, I would say a third big priority is the continued adaptation of talent strategy to what has been a virtual environment. And at the same time, our firm has continued to grow. So we've really wrestled with what does it mean to onboard, integrate, assimilate new people in a virtual world and have them feel connected to our overall talent mission when some of the things that we relied on by virtue of being together are no longer available to us. So sort of the adaptation of talent strategy has been sort of a third. What does it look like going forward mm-hmm. is sort of a third prong.
Yeah. So you're one of a few companies that have already come out and made a hard stance about returning to the office. How did you come yes. to that decision? What were the main reasons that you decided to return to the office?
Yeah, it's easy to say and hard to do yeah. in sort of having a point of view about it. And I do want to start by acknowledging, you know, a lot of the trade-offs that I think are sort of well documented. People enjoy, I mean, and myself included, I have a family. I enjoy not traveling and not being on the road and not having the commute and having that time with my family. I have never felt busier, but I've also never had as much consistency to my exercise routine as I have in this past year. So, you know, there's certainly some benefits to that. I know that there are people who are choosing to be closer to family during this time, and that's appealing. So this sort of idea that you can work from anywhere and be productive, I think, on the plus side for us, we've seen productivity continue, and we've always had a very a really exceptional workforce. And so the issue of sort of trust and monitoring as it relates to people working remotely was not something that was really top of mind for us. We really had a lot of confidence in our colleagues as professionals and their client orientation. What I think we've seen on the other side, and where we've sort of wrestled with the trade-offs, is first of all, just from an individual perspective, all of that time at home comes with a cost. And there is a lot of focus on the blurring of boundaries between work and home and the impact that has on your mental health. And I see it in myself that not having that commute, you don't break up your day and kind of give yourself a mental space to recharge. And so that is something that we're hearing from individuals. They feel more isolated. They feel like they're always on, sort of the pressure of work and work-life flexibility and balance is not easily maintained in this environment. And I think what we're also finding, and I've actually, there was a lovely piece in the Wall Street Journal last week about sort of the intermediate relationships that are lost during this remote environment. So certainly the people that you work really closely with, you keep working with them and you have a foundation for a relationship that is already very strong and built over time and built over trust and repeated interactions. But what you don't have is sort of those intermediate relationships where it would feel a little strange to schedule a formal call, but it's the people that you see in the hall, the people you see in the lunchroom, the people you see in the elevator. And those relationships are really suffering. And what they're there's been some research emerging about sort of the value of weak ties and the role that plays in your network and your own personal satisfaction. And also that's sort of the feeder system for strong ties is that's where you start with acquaintances and those build into deeper relationships. And without that kind of space, it's very hard to integrate new people. It's hard to grow. It's hard to preserve culture and mentorship and collaboration. And I think that it's easy because we are still so productive. It's easy to say, I can be just as productive at home, but it's the metaphor I use is, you get used to the artificial light, but it isn't the sun. And so I think we have to realize that something is being lost in terms of our ability to sustain and really thrive for the longer term beyond sort of this time. So for those reasons, we are going to reach a point where we will want people back in the office and engaging with their colleagues, building those relationships, mentoring and developing others. And it's really sort of that mid-level that really needs that. They're the ones that mentor the more junior staff, and they're the ones that apprentice to the more senior people. And that's really where the future of the firm is. So we have a pretty strong view. Again, it isn't an easy conclusion, but a pretty strong view that's pretty critical for that future of the firm to have access to those relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, And obviously, given the fact we're talking about this on the podcast, I'm assuming this has been announced.
Yes, it is. We had an all company meeting last week. And I think the thing to say, too, that is also a hallmark of CRA, which is something that makes it tricky in practice, but is something that's very special, is that we are a firm that tries to support each individual and their family and personal needs. So this is sort of the aspiration and the goal, and this is where we see ourselves getting to, but the journey there will be flexible and adaptive to individual circumstances, because certainly people have personal challenges and things that they're going to need to wrestle with, and we always want our colleagues to feel supported. And it isn't going to be, I mean, we often say we went to a virtual company literally overnight. I mean, it was, we had everybody in the office, and then the next day everybody is at home. It isn't going to be like that in the same timing on the way back.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, because there may be some people listening going, wait a minute. You can't just be like, okay, everyone, we're back now, back in the office. How did you go about communicating it? Because that must have been really tough, sitting down, writing that email, or did you say you did it all a Zoom call?
We did an all hands. And it's something that, you know, I think what we had going for us was a couple things. We were previously largely an in-office culture. So we had people who would travel periodically for work, but we are largely an in-office culture. And so that sense of community, I think, is something that we've already sort of had something to build on. This isn't a change for us. And we've been speaking with leadership over the past few months about our aspiration to be together again in person. And we always say the words, we will be together when the time is right. So providing that end goal state, but also acknowledging that the journey is going to be a little bumpy, and that's how we're working towards it. So it's really been sort of leveraging our other leaders, leveraging the history that we have, and then again balancing, because it isn't, you know, again, it isn't sort of a one size fits all. Everybody can just pick up and come back tomorrow. There, you know, we have certainly, like many people who have relocated or made changes to their living circumstances or their childcare circumstances, and we certainly understand that as well. But I think it's really just been that positioning consistently for a several month period.
Yeah. So you don't think people were surprised?
I don't think surprised is the right word.
Yeah, maybe not the right word. I mean, again, this, yeah.
Yeah. I think what is tricky, right, is I think there are going to be people whose circumstances have evolved, and they will want different decisions about how they structure their life and their personal circumstances, their living locations. And so I think that's, you know, that's something that we'll have to address individually with folks.
Yeah.
But I think because the messaging has been reasonably consistent that we are better together, that we want to be in the office together, I think that's at least let people hear that.
Have you, and you've maintained that throughout?
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's been since last summer.
Okay. Well, that's an important point to make then. So isn't like, yes. Yeah. Yeah. What were some of the other concerns people had during the all hands?
Yeah. Well, I think the other, I think one of the things that certainly we are wrestling with and we're sort of keeping an eye on is, you know, the market for talent is very competitive for us and for many, I'm sure. And so one of the things that we are watching is sort of the peer companies that we have, and, you know, if they're offering more flexibility than we will offer, that's something that we're going to have to wrestle with. So that's been a concern that's been raised, is will we be competing in the market against companies that are going to offer a little bit more flexibility? And again, you know, that's where I think we just are trying to have the courage of our convictions that, again, these situations are never black and white. They are trade-offs, and people have to pick the set of trade-offs that is best for them. And so for some people, an in-office culture with mentorship and with, you know, social activities, volunteer committees, you know, networking that comes from being in the office, for some people, that is a better fit.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. 2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024. And the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
And that's the type of firm that we are, and that's the type of person we're going to attract. So, mm-hmm.
Did you do a survey beforehand?
We have been surveying. We did a lot of surveying in the first, I would say, 8 to 10 months, and then it became clear that we were in this for a little bit longer than we had hoped.
Yeah, I think everyone realized that. Yeah,
I know. So I think initially, you know, we weren't quite sure what we were waiting for to go back. And I think as soon as the vaccine news started to emerge, it became clear that there would be sort of a better endpoint defined by the widespread availability of vaccines. And so that's sort of what we've mm-hmm. what we've been now keeping an eye on. Last summer, we did do quite a bit of surveying. And I think what was interesting about that was it was really difficult for people to define sort of the alternative scenario. So they knew they weren't ready to come back to the office, but what they couldn't quite articulate is under what circumstances
yeah,
they
you don't
wouldn't
know.
Be ready. Because there was, you know, the vaccine was still not, you know, it was still far on the horizon. And so we had a lot of variability then from people who said, I'm ready to come back now, to I may never come back. I mean, nobody really knew that. But now that we have sort of a path with widespread vaccinations, I think we have a little bit more of a sense of it.
Yeah, definitely. Is it a completely hard stance in terms of like even some of your most senior top talent, whoever it may be, they can't work remotely? There's no exceptions? Yeah. Yeah, because I'm sure people have been like, well, is there exceptions?
Yeah. Well, and I would say, you know, we're not a firm that is so rigid in that way. So we've certainly had exceptions to date, but they are a minority, a small percentage of people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think what we have asked of individuals is, and we've asked of our leadership, is that it is a small exception basis. We have some considerations that people need to put in place to make sure that those exceptions are considered fairly and thoughtfully, that there are, so we have sort of a process for that. But I guess what I would say is, you know, our senior leaders are really the ones who have the most to give in the office in terms of the role that they play.
Of course.
And we've always stressed that we're an apprenticeship culture. I think a lot of knowledge firms feel that way. We watch the law firm industry as a parallel, and I think that they have a similar view, which is that junior attorneys learn the art of client relationship building and managing teams and navigating conflict. And our firm is very similar to that. You know, you sort of learn that by watching and by talking through it. And so to have those seniors in the office and physically present to be able to impart those lessons is really important. And so we do lean on our senior people to sort of help set the example, even though they are the ones who probably could work remotely with the least loss, they have sort of the largest role to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely makes sense. How are you dealing with the health and safety concerns? So for example, I just spoke to a CHRO just before this call, actually another podcast, and they've just announced there was a lot of talk internally about are we going to be required to be vaccinated in order to return to the office, and kind of went around their internal social network and sparked some conversation. And they actually just made an announcement saying, you know, we will not require you to have a vaccine in order to return, and just kind of just put a hard stance on it because it kind of got a bit, you know, not out of control.
Yes.
But there's a lot of conversation about that.
Yeah, that certainly is. And I haven't seen, to be honest, too many companies coming out and requiring mandatory.
I haven't seen one, to be honest. So I'd love to.
Yeah. I mean, we certainly encourage it. And as I think many firms are, and And we have protocols for right now. Our offices have stayed open, but we have some limitations, capacity limits for people to go in. It's been ebbing and flowing with local guidance, depending on where the office is located. I know we have a London office, and the restrictions on working from home have evolved. And so we adapt based on what the jurisdiction requires. But at this time, we're not planning to require vaccinations to return. We do have a screening protocol that we ask that people follow, and we ask that they follow the guidance of their local jurisdictions mm-hmm. as well.
Is that when they come in, like a temperature check and stuff like that?
Yes, exactly. A temperature check. Some of our jurisdictions have restrictions on travel and quarantine requirements after travel. Mm-hmm. Others have sort of a screening assessment that you have to complete. So different kinds of requirements depending on where we're located.
Yeah.
But all of them are sort of intended to sort of preserve the safety of the office environment. And we've adapted our office space as well in terms of conference rooms, and there's hand sanitizer everywhere and things like that as well.
Yeah. But surely, in order for you to get back to that workplace environment you want, that there's going to be a point where you're going to not require, but there's going to be a need for the vast majority of people to be vaccinated.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Otherwise,
that's
it's not
right.
going to work.
That's exactly right. And I think what we actually are hearing, because part of what I also am doing is just sort of ear to the ground, is that I do think there is sort of a very slow but accelerating increase in getting back to the office. And this goes back to where I started, Chris, which is that there's a lot of our colleagues who are really tired of being at home and tired of not. Even before the show started, we were chatting a little bit about how nice it will be just to see people. And, there are people that we have who live alone or they live with roommates, and they sort of miss that that social environment of being together. So I think it's going to actually happen more organically than we maybe fear, because I think that the reasons for us to want to be together are compelling, and they aren't something that we just sort of made up, but they're sort of grounded in who we are as colleagues and people and how we want to interact with each other. And so I think we're going to see leaders and our colleagues, our more junior staff, mm-hmm. ready to be back together.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are going to agree with you. I'm here in the office. I live 5 minutes away from my office, but I still come here. Because I want to be in the environment. I think the challenge you're going to have, like you've mentioned, is what people are going to say. Yes, we want that, but we also want the choice. That if I do want to work from home this day or that day, I think that's going to be the counter argument. And I think it's also valid. And, it also has its own benefits to it. And also depending on your circumstances, of course.
That's true. And we've always provided that occasional flexibility. So when we talk about return to the office, what we really mean is the people who move to a location that would preclude them from ever being able to come into the office. But of course, there are days where you're waiting for a service delivery, or you just need a space to clear your head and think and not be interrupted and have some quiet space. Although I know our colleagues with families, that quiet space is no longer at home because everybody is at home with them. But certainly we've always afforded that flexibility. And I think that's actually one of the trickiest and most nuanced parts of this, Chris, which you sort of addressed a little bit, which is the communication, which is how do you communicate a strategy that is on the one hand and on the other hand? And that it would be easier if it were black and white and we just said this is the requirement, but trying to message in a way that's very consistent for the firm, but also very adaptive and sort of accommodates and lets people know that, we have never been a one-size-fits-all firm. Is very challenging. There's a lot that's challenging about sort of the tension of mass communication and scalability versus bespoke and one size fits one. And we wrestle with that daily in myriad ways.
Mm-hmm. Are you relying and sort of training and communicating through your managers, I'm assuming, and their teams, because you can't reach everyone.
Yes. And that's something I will say is something we did do some surveying of folks over the winter period. And one of the things that we were hearing was that messaging is experienced in a way that isn't as consistent as we would like it. So it's something that with our internal communications team, we're really spending a lot of time talking through, which is how do we create more forums to cascade messaging and for listening and communicating, and how do we make sure that that people are experiencing information in a consistent way, because that is something that I think, you know, and especially being virtual, we sort of have to think a little more creatively about how to reach people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Was there any the debate around timing of communicating this? I'm just thinking, yes. I bet that was quite
all
tough.
All the time, all the time, because things are changing so quickly.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It's very tricky. I think we have been, the way I think about it is sort of a tiered message with greater and increasing level of detail. So we've stayed very consistent, as we talked about, at this very high level message, which is we will be back together when the time is right. That's been repeated, you know, very
consistently. It's like your why, your purpose is part of the values.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And then, you know, we started last summer to create, again, you know, in hindsight, of course, it looks ridiculous that we had a plan to re-enter the office last fall, but we didn't know what we were dealing with. And so I think we thought it took a while for us to realize this wasn't temporary. We then created sort of a series of reentry teams that gave us that distributed leadership to help with messaging. But then we never really activated them because it turned out we were status quo longer than we thought. But we have sort of a distributed leadership infrastructure that is sort of ready. I almost liken it to it's like the IV, and we just have to fill it with medicine when we're ready. But the IV has been placed, and we're ready for it. But to your question about timing, I mean, I think the best we can say right now is we will give people 6 to 8 weeks notice of when we think we're at a tipping point to say, okay, we're ready to start to build back to the office. And the factors that we're looking at, like I said, we're looking at vaccination availability and rates. We're looking at community spread. We're looking at local jurisdictions. We're looking at the return to school for our families with children. And we're looking at public transportation and sort of comfort levels that we see in terms of people using public mm-hmm. transportation. So those are some of the factors. But and then we have a best guess that maybe it's September 1st, but that could change.
Yeah. I was about to say, how are you even tracking that on a global scale?
Yes.
Like, do you have like someone dedicated in your team, or like what's the approach?
We do. Actually, we have somebody, we have a task force, a reentry task force. And one of the people is sort of, two of the people actually are tasked with just sort of capturing news and updating guidance in the cities in which we have offices. We're in about 20 different locations. So we have somebody who's just sort of tracking what are the different standards, and then we're in touch with the reentry teams in each of those offices as things change.
How crazy is that? That's now a role.
I know. I was just thinking that as I was saying that this is a whole structure.
It's a whole.
You wouldn't have thought you needed, right?
Yeah. Do you think they're going to continue after that? Some, not obviously to the level you need it now, but do you think that always is going to be these task force now that exist in companies? Because in the past, we never really, that was never a thing, right? Right. Like, do you think that's going to be a part and parcel of org structure in a way?
So I would say there's probably three things that we will take from this that will continue as we go forward. Certainly the enterprise risk management approach, right, and the emergency responsiveness, we've sharpened that over the last year or so, and that encompasses health and safety, but also things like cybersecurity, which has always been a top priority for us. We deal a lot with confidential data, personally identifiable information. We are subject to a lot of laws, including GDPR. So that's always been a priority. But sort of the enterprise risk management and emergency responsiveness is something that we've really sharpened. The second is that I think we've gotten more attuned to how we integrate new hires, because we've had to sort of formalize what was previously informal during this time when you couldn't rely on sort of the accidental encounters and sort of the social cues that come from being together. So we've actually gotten a lot more directive than we used to be. You know, we used to say, check in with, you know, we have onboarding partners or mentors, and we'd say, check in with somebody who's new. Now we say, call them once a day. You know, we're just much more prescriptive. And people have actually appreciated the clarity that comes with that. So I think we'll keep more sort of directedness, but also maybe a little more structure than we had to how we thoughtfully adapt and sort of integrate people into our firm. And then the third area that I think we are really thinking about is, what does the future of communication and information flow look like when you have people who are, you know, kind of in different locations and receiving and consuming information in all different ways? I think all of the tools that have now become much more ubiquitous in terms of, you know, Zoom and Teams and Skype and all these different channels and approaches, I think we're going to be more expansive and sort of creative about how we reach people. And so I think that for us will also be sort of a disruption that happened that we're going to take with us.
What's been the biggest kind of learning moment for you personally during all this? Because it's never been really more of a challenging time, has it, for HR leaders?
No, it hasn't. And it's funny because I often will say, I don't think I've ever slept as hard as I sleep every night just from the intensity of the days. Even though the hours aren't quite so long, you know, definitely a sense that you're wrestling with sort of the well-being and the, you know, and layered into it is we have a number of people in our CRA family who have had COVID or who have relatives who have passed away or been very ill. And so there's also this reality that this is a life or death situation for some, and that strikes deeply, I think, for us. But I think one of the biggest learnings that I have taken is actually the infrastructure that's in place before a crisis is worth investing in, because it's the infrastructure you draw on when you're in the crisis. And so I think about the things that we did previously that worked well. Our corporate leadership team was well connected, and so that continued seamlessly. I think that we had things that we weren't as good at before that we then couldn't draw on. You know, it was hard to sort of build the infrastructure at the same time. And we talked a little bit about sort of the cascade of communications. I think we had been a little more casual about that, and so we didn't have that to lean on. So I think what it's really crystallized for me is, during a crisis, you draw on, you know, if you want to handle a crisis well, you have to prepare beforehand. And you have to really be prepared to draw on what you've put in place. Because when something is going as fast as COVID was going in the beginning, in terms of everything changing so rapidly, there was really no time to sort of zoom out and think more strategically or long term. You just had to sort of adapt in the moment.
Yeah, no, you're completely right. Well, look, before we wrap up, I'm going to jump into our quick fire round. So I'm going to ask you 5 questions. I'll do this for every guest, and you have no longer than 30 seconds to give us some amazing answers. Okay. Are you ready?
All right. No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. What was the number one thing that was holding you back from becoming a CHRO?
My own recognition that this was what I wanted. I'm embarrassed to say that along the phases of my career, I had always raised my hand for the next big role when I saw the opportunity, and I didn't raise my hand for this. Somebody had to tap me. My CEO had to tap me. So I'm embarrassed that I didn't sort of piece that together.
I don't think you should be embarrassed. I don't think most people chose the path. It was chosen for them, or they had a leader that saw that in them. So I think that's pretty common. What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
It sounds so trite, but I think being curious is really important, and being humble that you may not have all the information. So I feel like in my life, I'm always trying to understand where people are coming from and trying to move them. And I can't do that if I don't ask good questions and be really open to hearing their responses.
Mm-hmm. How would your family describe what you do for a living?
They think I fire people.
You're like,
I tell them what to do. They don't really have a totally nuanced understanding of what the head of HR does.
Yeah. What's a common misconception people have about you?
That's a hard one for me to answer. I don't have a witty answer because
you're not supposed to have a witty answer. Yeah.
I know. I'm quite a transparent person. I actually think I'm quite an open person. So I think that what you see is sort of what you get with me. I'm not sure that there's hidden depths that are undiscovered.
But that could be a misconception, though. The misconception could be that people don't know that you're very transparent and assume perhaps that you're not.
That's true. You know, maybe one misconception slightly. I mean, it depends on how well people know me, but I do have an MBA with a concentration in finance and an econ degree. So I'm maybe a bit more quantitative than the average HR bear, so to speak. So
yeah.
I do have that in my background.
Last question. You know, what's one thing about your business that you're most excited about?
It is most excited and most scared, but we have grown over the past year. We are continuing to grow. We're continuing to add people and sort of the tension, I think of it as sort of, I mean, we talked a little bit about this with the return to the office, but the tension between on the one hand and on the other hand, growth has a lot of that. So you want to be able to scale, you want to be able to accelerate growth, but you don't want to lose sort of the distinctiveness of the people that you have in the firm. You don't want to make things one size fits all. So that tension and the sort of heterogeneity of the people that we're bringing in is really exciting to me. And it's really scary to think about how do you build a talent strategy that's sustainable, that's scalable, that accommodates an increasingly diverse workforce and increasingly kind of differentiated and variable workforce in terms of educational backgrounds and socioeconomic backgrounds and experience, geographic. It's scary and exciting.
Yeah.
Like many of the best things in life.
Yeah, I was about to say,
The things worth doing are usually difficult.
100%. Well, before I let you go, where can people connect with you and reach out and say hello if they want to reach out and say hi?
Absolutely. I'm always up for good networking, and through LinkedIn is the best way to reach me.
Amazing. Well, look, thanks again. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your journey and experience and obviously the stance that you've made. You know, many companies are still like in the balance of doing it. It's great that you've kind of communicated that and you're clear on your why, your purpose, and getting everyone back. So I wish you all the best with that, and I look forward to catching up again in the near future. All right.
Thank you, Chris. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Bye-bye.